What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough, and we can go through some things and struggle at times. This is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Just some housekeeping. Remember, we are doing the book club for the month of March. Our book is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. The episode after this one will be the podcast where we recap that book. So be on the lookout for that. And if you haven't consumed the book yet, it is on Spotify and YouTube for free as an audiobook. So get out there, consume it, get it in your head. And thanks to our friends at NeuroGum. They sent us a great care package here. Keeps us energized and focused throughout our podcast. It's chewing gum. They've also got the mints, 40 milligrams of caffeine, B6, B12, and L-theanine. I was reading a thing recently. There's a study out there that's scientifically proven that these things help with memory recall and focus. So get out there, try some NeuroGum. We're all big fans of it here.
And also shout out to our people over at Fit Flavors. So we got a one-time code through the end of May. So for per person, once online gift cards using the code podcast50 will get you 50% off. I mean, I went and did about $1,000 gift card for $500. I eat there a lot, so it was awesome.
Yeah, why not? 50% right? off.
50% off.
It was great. Combating inflation for y'all.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's absolutely. Why we're here. So check it out. Go to fit-flavors.com, search their gift cards, and enter the promo code podcast50 for 50% off through the end of May.
That's promo code podcast50.
Podcast50.
All right, guys. It is a Thursday episode, so that means we have a guest in studio. He's a personal friend of ours, a mentor to Murph, a friend and client of mine, the owner of Posted Social, the great and powerful Matt Joe.
What an intro.
Straight out of Normandy and Weston.
Yeah. He's
What's
here.
Up, guys, man?
What's up, dude?
What's going on?
Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Oh, dude, thanks for having me. I was pumped when Pat texted me last night and reminded me this was today. I was like, right, that's on my calendar. This is great. Dude, I'm excited to be on. You guys have an awesome show, man.
Yeah, it's been fun, man.
A lot of appreciate
fun.
It.
It looks like a lot of fun.
It's a blast. Least, you know? Yeah, we have a good time. I look forward to it every Wednesday.
Yeah, and personally, I mean, I have to give you credit because if it weren't for the time that we spent together over the last few years, like what Zach said, I mean, you've been a huge mentor to me. And I mean, if there's anyone who taught me don't shoot wide open all the time, it's been you. And I appreciate that. And it really came to fruition later on as we've gone through the show, because those first ones, they're wide open, like 2.8 everything, man.
Yeah, dude. I mean, especially with like the difference in like length from your camera that Zach and Pat sit. Mm-hmm. Crank that f-stop up. You know?
Mm-hmm. Learning process.
Keep them both in focus. You know,
I'm doing my damnedest, bro.
No, dude, it looks great. Everything looks great, and even the studio is gnarly, man. You guys put together a sick studio here.
Thanks. We just wanted to kind of make it into a, you know, a little version of us, you know, a little piece of us. So it kind of just feels like you're walking into, you know, our setup. You know, because I feel like a lot of podcast studios you see online, it's like, you know, it's just like the sound tiles are just like all over the wall, and that's it. It's just kind of blank and generic. I mean, it looks like sharp and cool, but I was like, man, I wanted to make this into like a cool thing.
It's like Rogan-esque. It's STL Rogan.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's the goal.
Yeah, we. I mean, that's the thing too. Is like, there's a bunch of different podcast studios around that we could use, but we were able to make this one our own and customize it with pictures and jerseys and flags and all the stuff that makes it us. And so yeah,
Matt, let's hear let's tell the people kind of like your origin story. I know you got kind of a pretty crazy childhood, so I'd love to, you know, I think if you're willing to share, you know,
yeah,
tell us kind of how you grew up and what was that like.
Dude, I grew up I just said this actually recently. I was on another French podcast, and I didn't think about it until I was preparing for that one, but in my mind, my childhood was super normal until it wasn't. And then I was like, oh, guess this was a little weird. But so I say, I grew up pretty normal from like what I like choose to remember all the time, which is like super suburban. We grew up in upstate New York, or I grew up in upstate New York. But as a baby, I was actually like tossed around in foster care for a little while, for the first 3 years of my life, actually. And my parents were addicts. They were in and out of jail. They were in and out of rehabs and all types of stuff. So that was pretty wild, but I actually don't remember any of that. And then from like 3 to 7 or 3 to 10, so for 7 years, I got moved to Florida, which with my birth parents, which was just a terrible thing, horrible experience. And Florida as a state, after New York had taken us away from our parents, put us in the foster care system, Florida decided they were going to do the same thing when I was around 10. And thank God my foster parents from New York, who were willing to take my twin and I together, when no one else really was, everyone wanted to separate us. So a set of foster parents that we had in New York as babies heard that we were going to be put in foster care in Florida and actually flew down there and petitioned the state of Florida to bring us home with them. And that was kind of where in my memory, and maybe this is like a trauma thing.
And how old were you?
I was 10.
Okay.
That's kind of where my childhood memories start. Like I have like some bad memories from like the time that I was with my birth parents, which was like, obviously my mind like blocks it out for a reason, right? It wasn't great. I'm aware of that. And I also knew my birth mother before she died, and we've talked about it. So I'm aware of that. So like that was kind of wonky, but from then on, from 10 on, lived in upstate New York in like a super small town, went to a good school, played sports, like had a great childhood. My parents were like the best thing ever. They're angels. I always say like, it's so weird that I grew up in an atheist household, but like my parents are literally like a blessing to humanity. They're just such good people. So that was cool. So from 10 to, you know, 10 on, my childhood was super normal. I was always an athlete, always a great student. And I grew up in a house with 5 boys with a stay at home mom, which is kind of like where I get my views. my dad, you know, worked rotating shifts our whole life. So he's just super blue collar, worked at the same factory for 35 years and counting. When I was 15, my oldest brother, who was actually my parents' only biological son, so they had 5 sons. And they only had 1 biological, and he was the oldest, and he was 9 years older than Mark and I, and he was kind of our hero. But when I was 15, he tore his rotator cuff, and he was a big guy. He may have dabbled in the testosterone before it was fancy and legal, you know, so... but he tore his rotator cuff in the gym, went to, this is 2007, went to... 2008. He went to on call, which is like your urgent care here, and at that time, before like opioids had like destroyed our nation, they just gave him a prescription for Oxycontin, and it took him 6 months to die. So six months later, he had overdosed on heroin. It completely like took over his life. I mean, immediately. It moved so fast. Like my brother was a good kid. He like never did drugs or anything like that. We smoked a lot of weed in the suburbs.
Sure.
Had barn parties, and we drank a bunch of Coors Light.
Right.
And
yeah. Same shit.
Sorry, St. Yeah. Louis. Coors Light is what we drank in upstate.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
But Busch Light is way better.
Yeah.
Now I know. Thank you for showing me.
He started listening a little bit more country music, and he's like, nah, it's Busch Light.
So it took about 6 months for my brothers, for our whole lives to be turned upside down with the death of my brother. And after that, I kind of like lost my shit.
So you were how old when he passed away?
I was 16. Okay. When he died, I was a sophomore actively being recruited, like pursued by colleges at that point, for big colleges, Ivy League, a couple Division One, like
basketball.
Football for me. Football for me. Mark played basketball. My twin played basketball. Savage. Uh-huh. So we were both high level athletes, both high level students. Which, like I said, I had a lot of like Ivy League, like looks and stuff like that too, and partially because I'm black. You know, they got to give. Sure. So many, which is cool. You know, yeah. I'll take it. So I was a sophomore at the time, and our life got flipped upside down. I lost my cool, you could say. I started doing a lot of drugs to kind of like deal with what I was going through, and not like the good kind. Became addicted to coke pretty fast. Then I, you know, ended up selling cocaine for a while just because I needed to supplement, you know, the what I was using. It, yeah. And then I immediately, actually, almost immediately after Trav died, and I, you know, got into doing more than I was used to, into a world that I had never known, really. My parents found out, and they, like, tried to, like, ground me, like a good parent.
Sure.
And I actually just left their house, so, and I never went back. So
this is at 16?
It's 16, yeah. So I was pretty much, like, floating until I could get an apartment. I stayed on a couple friends' houses, and I eventually got an apartment, and in the city, which I had never known. I grew up in the country, in the suburbs, but I went into the closest city, which is pretty shitty.
So this wasn't New York City.
Not New York City, was it? No, it's just like a small city that like is still like the most city thing that we knew. You know?
Okay.
But it's where all the bad stuff happens where I'm from. It's like it's the ghetto. So we got an apartment, Mark and I together. Got an apartment in the city, and it just went downhill from there. I spent the next 2 years of my life getting worse, in as far as my addiction went, as far as the people I was surrounding myself with, as far as the types of crimes I was committing. Like it was bad, you know. I went real bad, real fast. And it was around 18 that I got arrested. And this is not the first time I was arrested, but I got arrested for something serious that I had done a year prior. And it turns out they had been building a case on me for a year at this point. And I was going to jail, you know, I was going to prison.
Can we ask what it was? Or?
Oh, yeah. So, yes. So, when I was 17, like in the middle of whatever I was going through, I was a drug dealer, obviously, in the city. It was in New York, in the state of New York, no matter where you're at, it's pretty cutthroat. You know, it's a dangerous game to be in, especially when you're dealing with like cocaine, crack, or heroin. Any of those three really get dicey real fast. But another drug dealer that had previously like kind of wronged myself and some other people that I like kind of worked with, he got robbed. And I was there, and I was a part of it. I don't want to misguide anybody. I was a participant in him getting robbed. But while he got robbed, he got shot in the ass, and I didn't shoot him in the ass. But yeah. So that happened. So when that happened, he told the police like right when it happened, when he went to the hospital apparently, and then it took them a year to build the case that they wanted to build for the people that were involved to go to jail. So it was a robbery, turned assault, which, you know, was initially like attempted murder, then got dropped down. And, you know, the robbery in and of itself is a violent crime in the state of New York. That's a class A felony. But those charges carry like 10 to 25, you know? So when you cop out, which I did, I ended up going to court, and, I got an 8.5 year flat sentence in maximum security prison in New York. And I ended up serving 7.5 of that. From 19 to 26, I was in prison. And which really wasn't that long ago. I mean, I've been home 5 years this year.
Wow.
In so May. Crazy. May will be 5 years.
I remember the day you told me you got off paper, too.
Yeah. It was Summer Smash 22.
We were sitting there watching Diplo, like, man, I'm free. I'm like, good.
Yeah. God damn.
But yeah, dude. So prison saved my life. Yeah. 100%, dude. I was going to die in the streets. For sure. I remember my good friends who are also like, you know, that I grew up with. Most of the people I grew up with are successful entrepreneurs now, but we all sold weed at some point, you know,
The union.
And in that season, you know,
the beginning of entrepreneurship right there.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah. Some of the best salesmen I've ever met started out as weed dealers. Mm-hmm. and that includes my brother, you know, like, honestly. No, but prison saved my life, dude. Like my friends, like I was pretty much homeless in those 2 years. I would like float around and like homeless. I was addicted to drugs, but I always had like thousands of dollars worth of drugs on me, but like never any money to like go. Like it was always
you're never liquid.
Yeah. I was never liquid. I was always like, you know, just barely keeping my habit alive. And I was so far gone, dude. Like my friends and I remember my brother would like I would go around because I knew we had like a clubhouse, let's say trap house.
Yeah.
But I would go and like hang out with my friends like when I was hungry or like when I needed like, you know, something different, you know, than what I was like spending all my time around. And like, they would just look at me like scared that I was going to die, like fear in their eyes when they saw me, you know, because of how like sickly I was. I was about this build in high school, senior year of high school. So like, I wasn't I was always this tall, let's say. My frame was the same, but at that time, I'm 195 pounds now, like is where I sit healthy. At that time, I was like 135 pounds.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Literally, like I was skin and bones, dude. And I was just like, it was really terrible. And I'd been through some things. I'd been stabbed multiple times. Like I got stabbed in the head one time, and I had a piece of a knife blade like come out of my head 6 months later.
Was it like, healed and pushed it out?
It pushed it out.
Yeah, I had something literally like that happen on my knee.
Like crazy. I was stabbed in the neck. Like, you know, so like
not my, with a knife, though.
My friends in Mark, because I didn't see my parents for those 2 years at all. My friends in Mark literally thought I was gonna die. And I could see it in them. And they would like give me food when they saw me because like I looked that bad, you know? And it wouldn't, without me asking, they'd be like, here, like something, you know? So it was a scary time. And like also too, like I mean, I was getting shot at all the time. Like it was like I was a menace to society. And it's not like this is not a brag. Like it was a terrible time in my life. But I say all that to say that God like reached down and snatched me up and sent me to prison, which was exactly what needed to happen. Because like, you know, everyone will say like when your friends or your family members or someone in your that you care about is in a dangerous way, you're like, that only leads to two places, death or in prison. That is 100% true. Like, you know, once you get past a certain threshold of fucking around, it gets real bad real fast. And I believe that that's true. And I'm grateful for my experience and where prison like brought me as a man. There's nothing else that could have happened to me that would have yielded the fruit that is me today.
Right.
You know what I mean? And for no shorter time either, because in prison, I've seen a bunch of guys like come and go and then come back. You go for a year or 2 years. You think it's almost manageable. No. I lost all of my 20s.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and it was just like, it gives you a different type of perspective, but it also taught me so much. And like, not for nothing, like I grew up in an atheist household, which was a good family, but we didn't know God. We didn't talk about God. We never discussed church or anything like that. Grew up in an atheist household. The best thing that could have ever happened to me through that experience is that I met Jesus Christ. I got saved in 2012.
This was in prison?
100%. Yep. Okay. It was about a year in. About a year into prison, and you know, really more out of curiosity than in boredom than anything. But like when you get to prison, it becomes very apparent very quickly that you either get better or you get worse. You can't like
you're locked up with a bunch of people that are
you can't maintain in prison. So like prison is its own world and its own environment that will literally like take you like almost absorb you and make you a part of it. And that in that case, you get worse. You're around people who are always thinking of crafty ways to get away with or to get over on or to do. There's literally guys that will spend 2, 3, 5 years in prison thinking about how to do their crime better when they go home.
Or in learning from other people in there, I'm sure. 100%. Like, oh, that's how you do that for this. Well, I can apply 100%. That to what I like to do.
And it's just like you're a product of the five people you spend the most time around with, right? In there. It's
the same thing.
It's the same thing. It applies no matter what, but like it's a dangerous like absorption of energy and information and mindset and all that. It's dangerous if you're not super mindful of it. And I decided in the beginning that like this was not going to be me. And it took me 2 weeks to sober up from my 2 year bender, you know? So in the time that it took me to get sober, I was like locked, you know, when you first get there, you're locked in your cell for 2 weeks just for like medical purposes. Like we want to make sure you don't have any diseases or infections or anything like that. So you get, you know,
is that in all prisons or just the one you went to?
When you first get there, that happens unanimously.
You're just locked in a cell by yourself.
You're going to be quarantined.
Okay.
Just for medical purposes. It's not it's just, hey, we can't have you bring, those are very closed environments.
Sure.
You know, airflow is all the same. It's all regulated. Like everything it's a closed environment. So they don't want you bringing in any sicknesses or, you know, lice or anything like that, you know? So I'm quarantined. And also, too, a lot of guys, when they first get there, are addicted to drugs. One or the alcohol, other. Yeah, right. some way or another. And this gives the nurses the ability to monitor your actual health and your detox and whatever else. You know, like if you are an alcoholic, you're going to go through some things that are going to be or addicted to heroin. You're going to go through some, and you might need some medication at some point. So they're able to, in those couple weeks, monitor you and make sure that you don't like actually fall apart from your withdrawals. So I got sober. And by the time I was done getting sober, I was like literally a puddle of like shame and guilt and remorse. And like I had realized with a sober mind, like how much wrong that I was doing. You know, like I did my parents wrong. I broke their heart right after they lost their son. I left. They lost two more sons within 3 months. You know what I mean? And my little brother, my poor little brother, lost all of his brothers at the same time, you know? So like, I didn't realize any of that for that whole time. Like I was just about me.
Right, about you.
And it started because I was grieving, but then it turned into essentially creating grief for everyone that loved me. But yeah, dude, so I sobered up and I realized, and I was just like, I was so sad, dude. And like, I just could only think to myself, like, how am I going to make this better? Like, you know, I realized how I was raised, and to this day, my father's the greatest man that I've ever known. It's not even close. And I've, you know, obviously you guys know, I know some pretty cool guys, but it doesn't matter. My dad, like, dude, if I could be a fraction of the man that he was when he was raising us and that he is today, I mean, my life would be complete, you know? I would consider myself a success in that. Like, in my dad, I don't think he's ever made more than 60 grand a year. You know, but yeah, so I started to like reflect on how I was raised and who I was raised to be and then like how I'd been living, and it just like tore me apart. So I finally got back in touch with my parents. You know, I finally, you know, Mark was there.
Was he at the same prison?
No, Mark, when I got locked up, Mark was still free and
okay,
running around and acting crazy, kind of like, you know, doing his own crazy stuff. But he came to visit me when I first got locked up. You know, it took him about a year and a half, I think, until he ended up actually having to serve some time as well. So I got locked up. Mark was able to visit me in the beginning. Then he got locked up, went home about a year before me. And then, so we were able to communicate at like the beginning and the end of my bid. Yeah. So, but yeah, dude, like it was crazy. So like, yeah. In the, you know, early on, like I just decided that I wasn't going to let this place make me worse, and that I was going to make the people that like had not stopped believing in me, I was going to make them proud. And, you know, it wasn't easy. I like swam against the stream, so to speak, for 7.5 years.
Well, I'm sure like in there, it's got the people trying to better themselves, I can imagine, are the minority.
Oh, extreme minority. And also people judge you. Like they will do whatever they can in the beginning to test your resilience in the decision that you've made. You know, there's some people that are like, I'm going to get better. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, they've been worn down.
There's a lot of politics in the prison system, and especially if you're one that's heavily influenced by gangs, your skin color is usually what runs the roost for you. And, you know, you could be someone who's like, hey, no, man, I'm trying to do my straight thing. These guys are going to test your mettle a whole fucking lot.
Well, what did you do to separate yourself from that to stay on path?
A lot, dude. A lot of it was fighting.
Really?
You know, I fought. I was boisterous. Like, I let my position be known. I physically separated myself. So you almost have to, in the beginning, overly alienate yourself in a physical sense. In order to make sure that everyone understands where you stand. Everything there is like group run, you know, it's like either if you're not in a gang, which is like a Blood or a Crip or something like that, then you're maybe with the Latinos, or you're with the Blacks, or you're with the Whites, or you're with the people from upstate, or you're with the city. So like there's always like some type of, everyone just segments themselves in these. They insulate themselves is a better word.
Well, we're tribal creatures. Makes sense.
Well, yeah. Yes, but also a lot of people in there are scared and they're pretending
for
that
sure.
They're not.
Want to go with this group. Yes. If I'm in this group, I'm protected.
You have backup.
Sure.
You have insulation. you know, and mm-hmm. it's almost like an insurance policy that you are with this group that this group respects, even if they don't like you personally. You know what I mean? So there's a lot, and there's a lot of politics. There's a hierarchy to things. There's a lot going on. And if you choose to be your own man, you don't get the benefit of any of that other than your own reputation. Like, that's the only thing that will carry you. And in the beginning, you don't have one unless you're like some kingpin or something. But like, very few people are, mm-hmm. right? In the beginning, you don't have one. So you have to build it. And building it requires some adversity. You know, you have to put up with some tests that will be sent your way. You'll be tried out. You know, people will test your resilience. They'll test your resolve. They'll test your, you know, your character, you know, and you got to pass those tests. And
do you have one time in particular that you were tested that like sticks out?
Maybe not really when you first asked. No. But then like, you know, like I've gotten into some, like the young guys in particular, you have to understand I was 19 when I got to prison. So I will say this, like, a max is definitely different than a medium in this regard. Like, Mark went to mediums and he had to fight a lot. In a max, almost always you kind of, you'll be tested, but more in like the mental gymnastic way. It's like you're going to have to fight, you know, a little, you know, here and there. You probably once or twice. Once people realize that you're not scared to fight, they'll stop trying to fight you. But for the most part, in a max, people almost unanimously give respect unless there's a reason not to. Like, if you're a sex offender or a rat or, you know, you work for the police or anything, like, if you have a reason for people to, like, not like you at on the first place, cool, you're going to be fair game for everybody. But if you're, like, a regular guy, you're almost always going to be treated like a man as long as you act like one. And if you don't, your card will be pulled immediately. But if you do, the reason why the default is almost respect, as soon, like I said, once you get those first couple wrinkles out of the way, there's going to be respect. As long as you're willing to defend yourself and you're not going to tell on the person that just challenged you, cool. Those tests are out of the way. Now you're given pretty much, you're going to be treated like a man, pretty regular, like pretty, I guess, like, nobody's going to go out of their way to respect you, like to, like, overly respect you, but they're not going to disrespect you. You know what I mean? It's kind of like they leave you alone. The reason is because in a max, the guy standing next to you could have an 8.5 year sentence like me, or he could have 50 to life. And you don't know who's who. So this guy, the guy with 50 to life, will not hesitate to kill you in here. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't care.
It's his jungle.
He's there anyway.
This is his world.
Yeah.
And he runs it, like, in his own mind. You know what I mean? And it's those guys, I mean, they won't hesitate. Whether you're wearing blue as a CO or green as an inmate, they don't care. Like, you will respect me because this is where I live. This is my house. Yeah. So you don't know. In a max, you don't know if this guy might be going home next week or he might never be going home. His mother might have just died and he found out on the phone last night. Or his wife might have just left after 5 years of being with him. She decided it's too much.
Too much.
You don't know. And guys, and it, people die.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? On a regular basis. Like, people die. So, like, that's why a lot of times you'll get tested softly. Those are what I call soft tests. Like, if you have to fist fight, soft test. Beyond the soft test, there are very few fist fights in a max. Because every fist fight is potentially life or death. You know what I mean? For that exact reason. You don't really know. When you're in a medium, everyone's going home at some point. Yeah, at some point here. And you know that if they're there, they're on their way home. Because, like, guys from the max will get dropped down to a medium. I was in a medium for my last year and a half, year and a couple months. But, like, we'll get dropped down. Once you get to the medium, you're on your way home. Yeah. You know? But guys in the medium will, like, just fist fight over anything. They'll just fight all the time. Like, it's like, hey, fuck it. We'll spend 30 days in the box. We're fine. We're still going home.
Right.
But in the max, you don't know. Like, you know, you just don't know. So you don't really fight. There's no conflict unless it's a real issue. Like, we don't make problems that aren't there. You know what I mean? Mm. There's no pride problems. These are either real issues or not issues, you know? So it was a blessing that I went to a max for that reason.
Damn.
Yeah, dude. So anyway,
that's crazy.
Out of boredom, met God, read the Bible, met God. And now, you know, I've been going strong with that, dude. I say going strong. I've had seasons of like lack of faith. I've had seasons of promiscuity. I've had seasons of, I've been divorced. I fall short all the time, but like, dude, like, it's kind of my North Star, and it has been since then. And that's what carried me through, I believe. I mean, I have miracle stories. Like I've been since being saved, I've been, somebody tried to stab me in prison, in my like neck face area. And, and made contact. Like I know that I should have a huge scar on my neck, right now. And I don't, and I mean, crazy shit, dude. God has like delivered me in, you know, some serious ways throughout my life. And now in retrospect from that crazy time period, you know, I can see all the ways that like God was working in my life, and he protected me in multiple situations, like in prison and before prison. And it took me, you know, it took me getting to know the Bible to like kind of like come to know God. And then it took me to build a relationship with him to start to see how he's been working this whole time, even since infancy, when, you know, what happened originally when we got sent to foster care was our neighbors heard us crying for 4 days straight and then called the cops, and the cops came and found us starving because my parents had just left us there. So like,
you guys were just left in the house.
Yeah. That's how we originally got sent to foster care. So it's like, you know, even that, and that was 15 months old. So like, even then God was working in my life, and it was just, you know, it was at that point, like, you know, I was 19 going on 20. It was undeniable that God had been ever, you know, present in my life for years, at that point. And even at that moment, I was so grateful to have been to be in prison because I wasn't dead. And in my mind, in my heart, I was waking up, you know, which was really powerful. So,
yeah. Wow. Damn, dude. It's incredible. It's crazy.
Sorry, that was a long
No, I love it. Crazy. I love it. That's fucking, people are, I mean, that's super interesting. I mean, that's stuff that you don't hear every day.
Right.
For sure. So, yeah. So you came home from prison. What next? What was the first move? What'd you do?
Yeah, dude. So I came home from prison and, came home from prison, with a plan, dude. I came home to work like my dad. Like I said, dude, my dad's a big inspiration for me. So I was like, hey, I'm going to get a blue collar job. I'm going to, you know, make some, in where I'm from, you can get that's a good money. You know, you can make good money working blue collar. So I came home and got a dirt work job. I was a pipe layer for first year in some change home. My aunt actually hooked me up with a company that was really awesome. I enjoyed it so much. But in the meantime, I started a coaching business, online fitness coaching, nutrition coaching, because I had like gotten my certified personal trainer and my nutrition coaching certificates while I was in prison still.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I just had my wife at the time send me the courses. I took them and came
home.
So were
you married before you went into prison?
Oh, yeah. So this is, when I was getting ready to go to prison, I was seeing my ex-wife, and she was with regard to like, compared to all the other people I was spending time with, she was a great person. She was a bartender that just happened to work at a bar that I sold a ton of drugs at, and she didn't do any drugs. She had never done any drugs. She has 3 degrees. She's a sonographer. She does ultrasound. So she's great. She was just working at the bar to do extra money. And somehow she got wrapped up with me, which was probably a big mistake on her part. But yeah, so when I went to prison, I told her when I was going to court, I was out on bail when I was going to court, and, I told her, hey, listen, I'm getting ready to go to prison for a long time, you know, a while. So it's been great, you know? Yeah. And I tried to break up with her, and she was like, no, dude, like, you know, I love you. Like, we've been seeing each other for a while. Like, she's like, you know, I'm not saying at the time, she's like, I'm not saying I'm going to like stay forever, but like, I'll support you, you know? And like, what money I had when I left it with her. And, yeah, dude, like, I don't know. She was fantastic. She was amazing. And, she, when I went to prison, she was with me. Oh, and, we got married. She proposed this because in the state of New York, when you are going to a maximum security prison, when you're in a max, only in a max, and you are legally married, you can have access to trailer visits, which are like conjugal visits. You You can have a full weekend with your legal wife in like a trailer, in a trailer. And like those are like I had only ever seen those in the movies.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was real.
Oh, it's real. Yeah. So it's real. I don't know about every state. In the state of New York, those are still in effect. And they have like a little mini trailer park on the prison property. And it's still guarded, like you're still under, you know, but you get to spend, as long as you're in good standing, you're legally married, you have to have, there's a time, you have to have at least a certain amount of time, I think it's 7 years, until your go home date, okay. Whatever. So, you know, there's stipulations, but, sure. And you have to qualify for it, you have to apply for it, and she has to apply on her end and stuff like that. So it's a process. But we were like, hey, we can still like have conjugal visits if we're legally married. Like yeah. If it doesn't, and I wasn't saved at the time. And I was like, if it doesn't work out, we'll just get a divorce. It costs it $1 to get a divorce in a New York State prison. So I was like, hey, what, you know, what's the worst going to happen? Whatever. And I wasn't, you can tell I wasn't talking to my mom at this time. Sorry, mom. but we did that. We got married real quick. I went to prison and, she ended up staying, she ended up supporting me the entire time, the whole 7.5 years. You know, my last year, we decided to buy a house. And I mean, we had a dog when I left and he was still there when I came home. And I came home to a house and got home, worked for a little bit, bought a truck, started my coaching business. And like at the time, I came home and immediately got a part of a church. I'm all over the place. But when I was away, when I got saved, I shared that with her. And she ended up getting saved as well. Like when I just started really getting interested in the Bible and scripture. And I would share that stuff with her. Like as I wrote her letters almost every day. And we'd talk on the phone every day. And I would share my experience in the Bible with her. And it started like she got curious and she started reading the Bible alongside me. And we both got saved. And while I was away, she became part of a church that I came home and became a part of myself. And then, you know, my plan when I came home was to, like, work hard, be a good man, become a good husband and a good father. And I've always wanted to be a dad. And also, like, give back, find ways to give back. So when I came home, I became a part of that church and started volunteering in the youth ministry, helping, like, inner city boys. Who were, you know, kind of struggling and with whatever, you know, whether it was
who better to talk to,
church or parent, or whether it was school or parents or friends in the neighborhood, whatever it was. The church I went to was in a nice area and they used to bring kids in from the city to like hang out and have a good experience and eat some food and relax and, you know, maybe learn about God, but maybe not. Maybe just talk to somebody who kind of like cares about you. So I volunteered in that ministry for a while and it was really great. While I was doing the other things. The sad part about, like, I guess one of the first major hiccups or hurdles I had to go through when I came home was figuring out that my ex-wife and I just, like, weren't, like, long-term compatible anymore. Like, when we got married, we were, like, two very distinct people. Right. We were this person when we got married, when I was still a maniac and a menace to society. And she was, you know, figuring out what she had going on in life and whatever. We got married as these people. Then we got saved and we were like literally as the Bible says, we're new creations. We're brand new people. Like, but I believe and how I like to say it is we both eventually we just grew into the types of people that we were supposed to be. Like we grew into the people who God meant for us to be. And who we were raised to be, honestly, like who this is the man I was raised to be. So when I got home, we started talking about kids and parenting and, you know, worldview and ideologies and, you know, politics and a little bit of everything. And it became abundantly clear that we had very different views on a lot of those things. And predominantly the one that kind of prompted us to decide to separate together was just how we wanted to raise kids. We both really want to be parents. And in the way that we envision child rearing, raising, you know, young men and young women to kind of like contribute to the world was very different. And that's just something that we neither of us should have to, nor were willing to compromise on. And because of that, we ultimately decided to get a divorce. Although this was probably at the height of my walk with God, it was very difficult for me to make that decision. Mm-hmm. Probably it was the hardest decision I've ever made. But I did. So we got a divorce, and shortly after that, I started working with First Form remotely.
Remotely,
okay. Yeah, and kind of kicked ass. Yeah, and and eventually got offered a job out here to join the sales team at First Form. So that's how I got to St. Louis. Came out right after COVID started.
Like 2020?
Yep, right, beginning of 2020, maybe like February, March
2020. I think the first time I met you was Summer Smash 2021, actually.
Maybe.
That was the first time we had a Summer Smash post-COVID, and you were hooping. I remember seeing you hit some nasty layup on a room full of dudes who didn't work in the building. I'm like, damn, Mark's over there balling. I'm like, that's not Mark.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, dude, when I was away, Mark used to tell me about this guy. He used to, because when he went home, he was on parole for a short time, and he technically wasn't allowed to talk to me, but I used to have my wife three-way call him, and we'd just be chatting. So I used to talk to him almost every day, and he'd be like, yo, dude, there's this dude. His name's Andy. This dude's a savage, man.
Fire.
This dude's crazy. Like, he's got the MFCO, man. You got to meet this dude. Like, he's like, I got to meet this dude. Like, he was telling me, he's like, dude, I want to work for this guy. Like, so... and then he's telling me about this company, First Form. It's his company. And I'm like, dude, like, I've never heard of this. Like, I heard of Muscle Tech or yeah. like at the time, like Biotech, Cellucor, Muscle. Sure. The only supplements I'd ever been aware of, or C4, like that shit. That
grocery store supplements.
Like, methamphamphetamines in it.
Jack 3D.
Yo, dude.
RIP.
For real, dude. That was the good stuff back in those days.
RIP Ziz.
But yeah, dude. So he's telling me about this first. I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about any of this, but like, I'm excited that you're excited. And, So I came home, and Mark was already like full force kicking ass with First Form. I mean, like, he won an MVL, which is like it's a big
most deal. Valuable Legionnaire.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And he won this award that typically people with like hundreds of thousands of followers win. And he had like 1,200. you know what I mean? Like,
that's crazy.
He was a savage. Mark, I mean, he crushed it. So. So he ultimately got flown, like he did better than me. He got flown out from New York to St. Louis and like given the tour and like the pitch.
This was like right when the new building opened up too.
Yeah. It was before.
This
he was
earlier.
At the old
oh,
building.
He was at the old building.
He was at the
old
building. Okay. Mark was literally the very first wave of Legionnaires to be hired in-house.
He got there 3 months before me. And so I got there August of 2019, and it was him. It was Sean McDonough,
Seema.
JB.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seema started like 2 weeks after me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
So like, this is the very first wave of people who First Form plucked from various parts of the country to come teach
here.
Other people what they were doing, you know, and like, that's how good he was doing. And he did. And then, so anyway, I came home and he was like 3 months out of moving to St. Louis full time.
Did you get your licenses for training and all that while you were in prison?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
he started motivating you while you were in prison.
Yeah.
To start getting this.
Cause he did the same thing.
Okay.
And he was only, I mean, like I said, he was locked up for like the hamburgers portion of my
he did like five
meat.
And you did seven.
Yeah. So okay. It was like I had some little time in the beginning where he was out, and then I had a little time at the end where he was out. So in this section, he did all those things. He got a CPT, he got his nutrition, he got all the certificates while he was gone. He came home and his only plan was to start a training company and a gym, which he did. I mean, he came home and he built you know, his gym was doing like five figures a month within like 6 or 7 months of him being home. Like, he was crushing.
He was specifically helping like middle-aged ladies at that time too.
Yep,
huh?
Middle-aged women. And he was like helping them with their macros, nutrition, their supplements, their workouts, all the things. And he literally built a personal training studio that was probably like 3,000 square feet. It was legit. Wow. Like he came home with a plan and he executed it and he did very well. And that's when, yeah, First Form like snatched him up. And offered him this big opportunity to come be a part of what they had going on. And he was all for it. So when I came home, it was like we had, you know, 3 months or so to spend with each other after not seeing each other for 7.5 years. We had a couple months together and he was like, hey, man, like, you know, this is the opportunity that I've been working towards and I want to pursue. And he's like, I think you should take my place as the Legionnaire in this area. And I was like, okay. So when he got out here, I became a Legionnaire in his stead. And it's not like he could transfer customers to me. I have to build my own from scratch. But at least I had him to teach me what he was doing. And I started doing pretty well. Like, I did well. So as my coaching company grew and my affiliation with First Form got stronger and more reputable, I started to, think about, and also too, I was working on figuring out whether or not my ex-wife and I at the time were going to stay together. We were going to counseling and marriage counseling and church counseling and all types of stuff, trying to figure out how we were going to navigate this. And then Mark moved, or I guess he was already gone. But then I figured out, like, the divorce happened, and it happened pretty quickly once we decided. And then 2020 hit, and the church shut down, which was like my pride and joy at the time.
2020 in New York was a lot different than here too.
Oh, it was it was immediately shut down everything. Yeah. And I went through my own like faith struggle at that time because the church has really disappointed me as a whole, in the shutting down for COVID. Like, that just contradicts everything we believe. So I went through like a little bit of a introspective 6 months or so before, towards the end of 2019 and going into 2020. And then like everything shit hit the fan and I just pulled the trigger. I was like, all right, I'm coming to St. Louis.
Sick.
Like, I had nothing else. Like, I had my—
Did you even know where St. Louis was?
Yeah, I mean, I had an idea it was that way. You know? my parents were supportive of like what, we were pursuing just because they understood we lost a lot of time. They were, naturally upset that we were both leaving so soon.
You guys just got back and now you're leaving again?
Yeah, but with the divorce, dude, and I didn't have any friends that I wanted to really continue to associate with. I mean, they're doing great things, but like, I had a different idea for myself in mind. And Mark, my best friend in the whole world, I looked forward to seeing him again for 7.5 years. Like, there's no other like single person that I was like, I just want to be next to that guy.
What's your twin brother, man?
Yeah. It's like, we shared a womb together. He's been my best friend for 30 years. I don't think that'll ever change. The type of bond that we have, I just want to be with him. So I was like, shit, if I got to be a salesman to be next to him, then that's what I'll be. So I came out here and did the damn thing. Worked for First Form for like a year and a half. It was an amazing experience. Learned so much, just as far as like craft goes, whether it's sales, creative skills, camera work, like all that stuff I kind of learned either from my position or from people around me at First Form who are all great at what they do.
So, immediately came in and was stupid competitive.
Crushed it.
Just, of course, yeah. you would see you and your brother walk in and they'd just immediately be smack talk. You and Chaz would be like, man, you running up nothing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, like, and that's how Mark and I have always been that way. So competitive. Like, which I love about us. But like, when I got there, like, I really thought everyone else was like that too because of that's how Andy is.
Yeah.
And it kind of rubbed a lot of people the wrong way how competitive Mark and I were, which is like, in retrospect, maybe we should have took it a little easier, but it is what it is. Like, everything works out. I believe I believe my life happens exactly as it should, according to God's plan. So, no regrets or anything, but like, we were pretty rough. We went in there like roughhousing the sales position, and it was like it was no secret that we were kicking ass, which is cool, Yeah. So I just my expectation was a little different than what it ended up being. But it was overall an incredible experience. Couldn't be more grateful for like the opportunity to learn from everyone there. Andy and Sal, yes, but like also just everyone that like worked beside me, like Murph and Seema and Mark and Jay, like the guys that are still there, and then a lot of them are gone.
Right,
like a whole bunch of people that were hired in my wave are now successful business owners. And I think that's a testament to how great of a place it is to work for a short time or a long time.
Right.
So you go from coaching in terms of like nutrition, strength, all of that stuff, to starting your business as Posted Social and social media and video content. Where did the love of camera work and everything come from?
Yeah, dude. So it was kind of a natural. It doesn't seem natural on paper, but it was a kind of a natural evolution for me, because with my coaching business, it was important for me to keep up on my personal brand, which those of you that have seen it, is like, it was good as a coach. It was amazing. It was incredible. So like, I was very niche to fitness. I was very niche to workouts, exercises, nutrition information. And I made a lot of that content, just how I recommend most people start, with my camera or with my phone. I made a lot of content with my phone, and I would just like post every day, and I grew a pretty decent page. And it definitely served my business. Like, it was monetized at 10,000 followers, or actually it was monetized less, really, because it was monetized when I started affiliation with First Form. And so I had maybe 1500 followers when my page truly started making me money. And then I grew to, you know, 25,000 followers. And by that time, my page was doing really well. I mean, it was bringing me clients from, you know, a coaching standpoint, but it was also bringing me a ton of new customers through the First Form thing. So like, I mean, and there's significant commission that you can make from that stuff. So it was great. And I monetized my page, and it was a priority to me because it was monetized and it was supplemental income at the time. And when I came to St. Louis, I was like, okay, my page is what's going to have to generate me money while I'm learning my new job, because you don't start making anything in a sales position. You start making money when you start making commissions. You know what I mean? So you had to kind of work into that. So I was like, this is what I'm going to live on for the next few months. So like, I just put an effort into making the best content that I could for my brand and business at the time, which was really just like supplemental to what I was pursuing. But then after being at First Form for a little bit, I met a couple guys. My man Chaz. Yeah. Charles McDonald.
I love that dude.
Great guy. If you don't know him, M Chaz is his Instagram. He's a great dude.
One of the craziest athletes ever.
Freak athlete, dude.
He's a fucking freak. But he had a camera, and he made really cool videos. And when he got hired, I was like, dude, I like your videos. So we became friends. We were super competitive. We worked out together. We did CrossFit together, like a whole bunch of stuff.
If you could have seen you two and your brother, like from a third person, fourth person's perspective, yeah. I'm just like,
super athletes, man.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. So great dude. So he took the time to really just like sit down with me, teach me about his camera, how he made his videos and stuff. And then eventually, like, I was like, hey, like, I'm going to buy one of those. You know, and he went to the store with me, showed me what to buy, like, you know, helped mm-hmm. me pick out everything. And then as I went, he showed me how to use it. And it didn't take me long to kind of figure it out, especially just working off a tripod. It was, you know, pretty self-explanatory to me. So I just tried with trial and error. I just started making my own content while I was still working at First Form. And it got pretty good. When I finally left First Form, my choices were, well, my initial plan was to start to just go coaching full time. You know, I have multiple friends that have like, you know, that make very good money with coaching businesses. And if finances were like my concern, which they were at the time, I was like, hey, I could probably build a pretty substantial coaching business. But then Mark and Grace had this idea to use me essentially to build a social media management company. And they're like, hey, like, we think you should do this instead. And I agreed, just because, I mean, I've always been down for like try something cool. Mm-hmm. So I agreed. And, you know, so early on when I left First Form, I had friends that were still in the fitness space that were like, hey, can you make me videos? And I was like, sure. I had you like, mm-hmm. hey, can you make, you know, I had people just in my immediate vicinity that were like, hey, I could use some videos. And, the truth is I did a lot of work for free in the beginning, and then I like started going to businesses and like actively pursuing them and like trying to get jobs that were outside of the fitness space. But it really just started with like a bunch of friends that like took a chance on me when my work still looked like shit. And I practiced a lot for free, like I said, and eventually it grew into what is now Posted Social, which we, you know, we exclusively serve businesses or business owners. And, we do full on social media management, but we also do like media production, video production, whatever really needs to be done, event coverage, whatever. So like now I have a team that's incredible. We have a office right in the Grove. Like, mm-hmm. so it grew pretty quickly. Like my first full year my first full year as Posted Social was last year, and we had a pretty good first year, so it was pretty cool.
Well, it's grown exponentially. I mean, it's crazy to see what you've done in just a year.
Well, you know? it's as a freelancer that year, 2022, I left First Form in February. So as a freelancer that whole year, I think I made $35,000 just like figuring it out. And then from December to December, you know, December 2022, December 1st, 2022 to December 2023 and through the end of the year, we did almost $200,000. So
that's crazy.
It was like a switch kind of flipped that December 2022. I figured out, okay, this is going to be who I target. This is going to be who I serve. This is going to be how we serve them. These are the systems we're going to use for management. Here's, you know, kind of like, let's get organized. Let's have a plan. Like, let's put our best foot forward. And, I cannot take the credit for that, you know, 400% growth, by myself, because around May, I want to say, or April or May, I met Blake, mm-hmm. who is the infamous Blake,
The Blake Balake. You talk shit to.
Blake is a legend, bro. Yeah. Blake
Matt
is...
walks around the houses for my listings talking shit to Blake while he's doing it.
Legend.
When we were filming with Amy, we'd sit there and talk shit to the
just
camera.
Talk shit to Blake. Blake, Blake, you got to come over for drinks.
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, Blake's a legend. But he really helped my business grow a lot through 2023 because... I mean, he gave me so much more time. I mean, he's primarily our editor, but he also, he's magnificent with the camera, better than me. He shoots. He was at the time working a full-time job, and I was just giving him side work for probably like the last 7-8 months of the year. And then once the side work became like so much, I literally just gave back his W-9 yesterday. I was like, he had a full-time job. So once the side work became so much, as you know, he ended up deciding to leave his, you know, place of employment, which was K-Build, and joined me full-time, which was pretty freaking
was
awesome.
He doing content with K-Build?
He was their primary shooter and editor.
Really?
Yeah, he's savage.
They do some wicked shit,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, their so stuff's sick.
Like honestly, I have the most respect for K-Build's team. I know that they're probably like maybe a little bit upset with me right now, but I have nothing.
You stole their guy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't steal him. Like, I just
he
met
graduated,
him, and like, yeah. I just love the guy. He's a great guy. It's not a personal thing. Like, it's not a like I didn't try to steal. Like, I wasn't trying to steal him. Like,
hey, K-Build, you need somebody to film your stuff now?
Yeah, yeah.
Posted social. Yeah, no, Posted Social is pretty good.
Well, they have a great team. He was just a piece of their team.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
They have a great team. Great guys on their team. Even, you know, Josh and Rochelle, the owners, great people. Nothing but respect for what they got going on. But yeah, Blake, you know, I mean, I gave him a better opportunity than what. I mean, what happens when you are even First Form's guilty of this. When you're a company that does X and you have a media team, you are not a media company, you know? So your media people get pigeonholed into what you do, into X. So in First Form's regard, it's like, okay, these people who are creative, you know, that have creative blood running through their veins, they want to do this and that and this and some of that. And
you got to put the blinders on.
They want to learn this and they want to see this new software and they want to use AI and they want to like do all this other stuff. But you're telling them you just make fitness videos. You know, and in K-Build, it's the same thing. Like this guy, his bachelor's in cinematography. He went to college to be a cinematographer. He like, this is what he wanted to do is get into a creative space. He wants to make commercials. He wants to like make short films or vlogs or whatever it is. Like he wants to do a little bit of everything. And they were telling him, hey, you're just going to film house content. So it's like, it was tough. And also too, when you're one of those companies, you don't pay your media guys what creatives are typically paid.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he was a freelancer, he would make incredible money mm-hmm. as a freelancer. So like when you hire a media guy that has the potential, that is truly a master of his craft. If you hire a media guy that has the potential to make tons of money as a freelancer and you only pay him whatever, you know, a quarter of that, well then obviously there's going to be better opportunities out there. So like me coming in as my business is media, like I want your wings. I want you to spread your wings as far as you possibly can mm-hmm. and make all of this stuff awesome. Right. You know, whether it's facials or med spas or construction and roofing or, you know, wedding cakes in wedding venues in or real estate. Like, I want it all to be awesome. And that allows him to, like, really just, like, let loose his creative, like, kind of inside. And also, too, I want him to have the freedom and flexibility and the time to be able to, like, pursue new, like, software or AI tools or, like, DaVinci. Like, you know, whatever it is. Like, guys like him, like to, like, when they go home, they sit on YouTube and learn, mm-hmm. you know? I love that shit.
Right. I don't know how many times
I need
you
more
want
of that in my life.
Right?
Like, you
we
know?
All do, right?
Like, I need those types of people who love what they do and are great at it, and I just want to let you loose. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't want to restrict you at all. Like, I want to, like, let you run as fast as right. you want.
How
you
many
know?
Times you walk into my house, I was just sitting there on
just
YouTube
just learning. Yeah, like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Like, and when I had in mind to build a team, because I was very aware that what my limitations
so
are.
Much,
yeah. yeah, my limitations are everywhere. You know, right. I'm good with sales, good with people. Outside of that, like, I can use the camera. But outside of that.
Oh, now you're humble.
No. My idea when I'm building a team out is like, hey, I want to hire you to do just what you love to do. And you can do whatever else. You know, if he wants to shoot, he's welcome to. But like, he's the editor, and like, you better be better than anybody else at your job. You know, and me too. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the sales
guy. You're the
sales guy. Yeah. I better be better than anyone else on my team at my job. And if I'm not, I'm failing the team, you know. And same thing when I hired a social media manager. Like, when I hire you on, you better be better at your job than I am at your job. That's the standard.
Sure.
Like, I'm paying you to do a job that I can do, but I'm paying you to do it better than I do. You know what I mean?
So are you currently doing the social media manager?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I've been through two now. But yeah, like, that's the standard. And it's like, Blake has never failed to meet the standard. I mean, he's like, he's quick, he's efficient, he's creative, he's insightful, gives me, you know, I mean, he's loyal, he's freaking awesome, dude. Like, character-wise, it's amazing. So anyway, I say all that to say I can't take the credit for that big year that we had last year, which was amazing and a huge blessing, because I couldn't have done it without him. But this year, we're hoping to have an even better year.
That's all.
What's you know, last year you had a great year. This year, what's like the goal long term for Posted?
Dude, the goal, wow, long term, man, this is a big picture. So,
you know, like, year, 5 year, 10 year, like something like that.
Yeah, so the goal is to really build Posted Social is like it, that's my vehicle. Like, that's like Alex Ramosi talked about, like, you know, business vehicles. I don't mm-hmm. know if you guys are familiar.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. of course.
But like, that's my vehicle. That's my $100 million vehicle. You know, I don't think that there's any limitation on what Posted Social could potentially be. You look at something like Drive Social Media, they did 60 million last year. 60 million last
now,
year.
Now, do they have multiple?
They do okay. now oh, after they had a $60 million
Josh,
year.
Is that Josh Sample?
That's Josh Sample. Yeah. He's right here in St. Louis. And the only thing that he did to accelerate his business's growth to that degree this quickly is he started before everybody else. He was in he created an explicitly social media focused marketing company before anyone else had the idea to, locally at least, right? And now he has an office in St. Louis, which is his primary, and then he just opened one down in Florida, which is freaking sick.
That's awesome. Cosign Florida.
Yeah. I mean, incredible. And like I said, $60 million last year. And he's like a moderately sized, you know, marketing company at this point. There's much bigger ones and then there's much smaller ones. But there's no reason why eventually Posted Social can't be on that level, making eight figures a year. And with maybe multiple offices. I mean, up until very recently, all of their employees were local to St. Louis or remote with regard to mm-hmm. social media managers or graphic designers or stuff like that. But there's no reason why you can't build that. And, I think I look at, you know, the Drive Social Media, I look at, STL Bucket List, a mm-hmm. Bucket List creative, Lucas and his wife, they do a great job with Bucket List.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I look at these businesses who all operate a little bit differently, and I take like little pieces of each one of them and I like, and I build Postage, you know, kind of long-term plan, so like long-term goal. So I do like being, you know, almost exclusively social media focused, but I also like having a video production capability. Like, we like doing big video production jobs just like any other, because those are fun. Like, that's as a creative, sure. like those are the ones we like, you know.
Yeah.
And those are like the project that take like, you know, a lot of planning, a lot of forethought, like a lot of like, you know, we got to meet ahead of time, we got to come up with shot list, like we get to like really get creative when it comes to like bigger video production jobs, which is cool. So Drive doesn't do that, but I like that they focus heavily on social media, which we also do. Bucket List Creative, they do a lot of like featuring of local businesses that do an exceptional job, or maybe recently that pay them too. But like, I enjoy, like, I like small business. I like the community aspect that Bucket List kind of brings into their page.
I do too.
So yeah. I like doing that too. Like, you know, so I really would like to be like homegrown, like Bucket List. I would like to be homegrown. I would like to build our reputation in business off of companies right here in St. Louis that do a great job. And then kind of like expand from there the way that Drive did nationally and start to like shoot things for people, you know, maybe regionally at first, and then maybe take some national remote clients and stuff like that and continue to grow my team out. I think that long term, we want to just really be focused on the two things that we like to do and that we do very well. And I think we do arguably just as good or better than anybody else that's doing it, that I'm aware of, that I'm watching, which is, we want to have the video production, like the media side of the business. And we also want to have the social media management side of the business, which is very, you know, kind of time intensive, very interactive, very like hands on. And then this is like, you know, kind of supplemental, if you will. You know, we like to do both very well. And we really just like want to be hyper aware of what we don't want to do. You know, I have clients all the time that ask me for, you know, that asked me for website design or graphic design rebrands and stuff like that. And like maybe down the line, we can have a department, like we can hire on those skill sets. But right now, for the next 5 years or so, I don't really see us going outside of like, what is our target audience? What is our target demographic? What's the jobs that, what's our bread and butter and what do we enjoy? And like, let's stick with that. And everything outside of that, we just recommend. We have great relationships with other businesses that are adjacent to our industry, like industry adjacent businesses. So like web design and graphic design and branding and all these other things that we potentially, even Google ads and stuff like that, because we primarily deal with Meta platforms, which we can run ads, we can create funnels in that kind of world. But outside of that, Google and YouTube, we don't have we don't really do that. We don't do SEO stuff. We don't do whatever it is, like industry adjacent. Like, we have people that are great business owners that are, you know, pretty moderately sized and that can really invest in their clients' time and attention. So we like to just like be the best at what we do and then don't try to do any more, you know? But I think also that's the recipe for long-term success. I think spreading myself too thin with offerings and with capabilities and stuff like that is an easy way to dilute the service that we provide. That is our bread and butter. Like, you know, the quality of service might go down or the experience for our clients might go down if I'm trying to do 100 different things. So I think I'm just going to stay, we're just going to stay focused on what we want to do, focus on what we can do, we believe, better than anybody else, and just try to scale that.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. And you've got a couple different industries that you're working with across the board.
Whole bunch.
Oh yeah. What is one, it's two part. What is your favorite industry that you're currently working with? And is there an industry that you're trying to get into moving forward?
Yeah, dude. So I would say my favorite, oddly enough, is it's probably like, I would say medical is like the macro industry, because like we've done work with my buddy Chris Hill, longtime client, gave me a chance early when my video still sucked. But we've been managing his page for coming up on a year now. And he's a cosmetic dentist. He does veneers on a very high level, though. Like, you know, he's associated with like the best dentists in the country from like New York, LA, Arizona, and Texas. He's associated with those guys, but he's the Midwest guy. You know,
that's awesome.
He's very high level and he's right here in Clayton. But I love shooting his stuff. I really enjoy working with him. And then we've had the opportunity to work with like a plastic surgeon, which was cool. It's just weird, you know, just weird stuff, but it's really cool. And, and also like those are the clients too that like don't really flinch at like
the price
paying yeah. anything that you know you're well, worth, you know.
And it's not normal that you see
cosmetic right. with a great page.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's another reason why it's so cool, because it's so rewarding. Like people just like, you know, come in, or like he gets the virtual consults in Chris's case, you know, and it's like almost exclusively from social media, you know.
That's awesome.
And his patients at this point will come in, and like if I'm floating around the office, he's like, oh yeah, this is Matt. He's just like, he might be in here. Because his patients on the front end sign like, you know, waivers, whether they want their face shown, whatever it is, you know, so video releases. So I just float in his office as I come and go as I please. And sometimes I shoot, sometimes I don't. And he'll be like, hey, this is Matt. They'll be like, oh yeah, dude, I love your stuff. It's so cool. Like, oh, you do social media?
Oh, you do all his videos?
Yeah. And they're like, sick. They're like teeth are like, yeah. just like mess. You know? So I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you'll look good when, yeah, when he's done.
See you next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see those before and afters.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing. It's really cool. So Chris might be my favorite client. And then, you know, by way of Chris, dentistry has become one of my favorite things to shoot. And then an industry that I'm really, I mean, not for nothing, I really love, just because you guys are real estate, I really love doing real estate. Really love it. I think that it has become somewhat of a, like a challenge to make like the coolest listing videos.
Yeah, dude.
And I mean, I think ours are pretty dang good.
Awesome. I mean, but, go check out my page if you want to see any stuff. Any of the videos where it's in front of a house, those are all Matt. So
and they're super crafty, and like there's new ways. We're always thinking of like new ways to like make them look cool. And like the challenge too is like we live in St. Louis, like where 9 out of every 10 houses is kind of meh.
Similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not all the same.
So how do you take a house that's, you know, 100 years old and, you know, 1,700 square feet, two bed, one bath, like whatever, the typical 2-story, you know, St. Louis house, how do you take it and make it look cool? You know, because everyone's seen a million of those houses. So like it's a cool challenge, and I really like it. And, you know, and I have a lot of fun with it. And it's like, it's kind of Blake's background with mm-hmm. him K-Build. Being at K-Build. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like we kind of made those, a staple of what we do. So I really enjoy that as well. An industry that I really want to get more into maybe is like hospitality. So you'll see STL Bucket List does this very well. They go to like restaurants, coffee shops, bars, and they like feature them. And I know how they do it, but we want to do it better. Like, you know, we want to like they'll go and like they'll have like an influencer. Like I'll reach out to Murph and be like, hey, Murph, like, you know, Fiddlehead Fern, like, you know, go. And like as an influencer, they like pay this guy to go make like a UGC, like a user generated video here. It's like, oh, here's my experience, or spend the morning with me at Fiddlehead Fern. And then they make this video, and then STL Bucket List will post it and like get the attention of those hospitality businesses. And by way, like they work with a ton of them. They do their photos, they do their videos, like do a lot in the hospitality space, which is a little bit different than where we're used to, because I think from a financial standpoint, I would have to like make sense. But hospitality is not always like the most lucrative.
No, it's industry. I spent 10 years in that industry, and I'll tell you,
it's very tough.
Your profit margins are very, very slim.
Yeah, it's tough, but I think there's a way to get into it and still provide a lot of value for the businesses that are here locally without having to break their bank, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's like, I mean, you know, think of how many restaurants advertise with like old school styles of marketing, billboards, yeah. you know,
ads in the paper.
Yeah,
yeah, there's the paper, tons of ways like, to help.
How many more eyeballs are you going to get if you make this fucking sick video?
Sick videos.
You know, it's
yeah.
like, I don't know, man. Captures our demographic, so yeah. it's hard to say. But
100%. Yeah, so I've been working on that. So we actually shot a couple of, like, recently we shot with a brewery down in Washington. Okay. So we went outside the city,
yeah.
found a brewery. We were like, hey, we'll shoot you some sick content for free. And we just asked that, you know.
You post it.
You let us come in. And yeah, you let us come in, you post it. And how we typically do this in St. Louis is like we'd collaborate, but this brewery doesn't even have an Instagram. They just have a Facebook.
Oh, boy.
But it was great. It was great. We just got done shooting with them. We went down. We did one full day of shooting while they brewed. So the brewery was closed and they did some brewing. So we took our time. We got to shoot that process. And then we did a follow-up shoot where they posted on Facebook, local Facebook, like, hey, we got Posted Social coming in to like shoot some cool stuff and fly some drones. You know, we just asked, like, we'd love it if you guys packed the house. And they did. Like, town came out, came in there. It was packed. We were flying the FPV through the crowds. Like,
oh, cool.
That's awesome.
We were flying the drone around and people were like cheersing right as it flew by. Just pretty gnarly. So like we did a cool shoot with them. So those videos should be dropping in here pretty soon. But yeah, like that's how I pretty much attack like any industry is like, I'll just go shoot free shit. And like, once we make some cool videos in that industry, we're like, hey, look, you know, hey, look,
this is what we can do for you.
You know, okay. What's the one
sampling?
What's the right. one over here? Urban Chestnut. Hey, yeah. Look, Urban Chestnut. We just did this brewery video.
Right. Your forehands. Let's check this out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, I mean, it's worked thus far. So yeah, we're going to attack, you know, we're going to kind of start focusing a little bit more on hospitality. I would love to get specifically breweries and coffee shops. I think the processes of brewing and roasting for coffee and beer are very aesthetic.
You know, and also think of the demographic of both of those customers.
Right.
You know,
it's like young people. Young entrepreneurs. Yeah, 20 to 40. Hustlers. You know, people love beer and coffee.
Well, sitting at a coffee shop all day, who does that? Business owners.
Yeah, me. this guy right here.
The whole reason I bought a studio office space was because I was spending rent in coffee.
Yeah. I probably, this doesn't make sense. Yeah, the amount of money I spend a month on coffee is absurd.
Caffeine in general.
It's ridiculous, bro. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was one of the first pieces of advice you ever gave me whenever I split off from First Form and started my business, because I noticed you were in coffee shops literally every day. I'm like, this man goes into a coffee shop every day and just takes a picture of his coffee. He goes, what do you think I'm doing out there? I'm like,
I would just, that's how, when I first started, I would go to gyms and coffee shops. Those were the only two places I was brave enough to bring my camera. And I would either make a quick little video with my camera, or I would just take some badass pictures and post it on my story and tag them. And at the time, I had the benefit of having, you know, 25,000 followers. So I kind of show up at the top when I message people or when I tag them. So that was cool. So it got people's attention really quick. And I wasn't as boisterous about, you know, politics in the world at that time. Yeah. So when you came to my page, you just saw fitness. So it didn't rub anybody the wrong way. But like, I got a lot of inquiries just by doing that. And it was free. And they'd be like, hey, can you send me those pictures? I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, actually, you know, I do this for work too. Yeah. If you'd like, you know, I'll send you these for free. But like, if you'd like anything in the future, just like hit me up.
This is what
know?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of the way I got into it, which is kind of what I tell everybody that like Murph, when he came to me, I'm like, dude, got to do work for free, man. The seed of money is service.
Bro, and at least in my experience, I think it was the weekend we went to Orlando together, and just watching you up until that point, it was inspiring because we have a lot of similarities in our backgrounds and our stories, not all of them, but it was just like, you kind of took me under your wing that weekend and was like, all right, do this, do that. But like, you were like, you can tell stories, really good at telling stories.
Yeah, you are, dude.
And
which I still can't do, by the way.
I know a guy, but it was very, I think it was that weekend, especially when we were with Ian and Ashley and editing up in their hotel that weekend. I was like, seeing him did this makes me want to do it. And it was going to co-sign what you said earlier, because you were like, hey, when you work for a company, they're going to kind of pigeonhole you to what you can do. I remember having to talk with some of the management at First Form, like, hey, I'm going to leave to go do this. And he's like, well, you can do that here. I'm like, I can. Don't want to.
Yeah, no.
God love you. But like, I love everyone on the media team. They're all super skilled and talented. But seeing what you did, even seeing Mark split off and do the coffee thing, I was like, I don't want that ceiling. God love you. Love everyone here. Never a bad word about the company. But there are higher heights to be reached on my own thing.
100%, you know, and you know, I'm an advocate of entrepreneurship.
So well, I mean, like you said, they're a supplement fitness company, and as a creative,
if you were the business owner, you would have them doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
No shame,
right?
You know, it's good. Like, it's smart business.
Absolutely.
and if you were interested in being an entrepreneur, it's a great place to be.
Yeah,
you know,
of course. Yeah,
I mean, if they wanted to break out into the social media or into the creative aspect, they would have a creative company.
But again, then it's just like, hey, identify your vehicle,
right?
But that's not scale them. It, right? And that's not their vehicle.
No,
so it's like, cool,
right, exactly.
All right, respect. Yeah. You know, and I'm still learning from them. You know, but yeah, dude, long term plan, freaking grow,
just grow,
grow,
bigger than next year.
Do more and better of what we currently are doing. Awesome. More and better, not more as in more tasks, just more volume. More volume, better. What does Alex say? There's three things. It's like better, more, new. No, better. Yeah, better, more, new. Yeah. And I'm just never going to get to the new. I just want to be better, more. Better and more.
Better and there more. I like better and more.
Better and more.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And it's exciting to have seen you grow over the last year. And then what also is exciting, too, is you're about to become a father. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, dude.
Actually, when you sent me the questions last night, I was like, dude, fatherhood, manhood.
Right.
You know, entrepreneurship, like whatever, entrepreneurship, everything. Like, I love all this stuff, dude. Yeah.
The Matt Joe show.
Yeah.
Dude, I can get down with it.
We had a new member to the show.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, I am over the moon. Like, I'm ecstatic to become a dad. First of all, I have an amazing, incredible partner, Erica. Couldn't ask for a better woman in my life, dude. Honestly, like, you know, I talked about my divorce before. Like, we just, like, we're too different. Erica and I, like, complement each other perfectly. So we weren't planning on getting pregnant, and we weren't together long, you know, kind of in the grand scheme of things, before we ended up getting pregnant. And I don't care. I love that woman to death. I'm so excited for her to be, you know, the mother of my son. And I'm having a little boy. His name's going to be Jeremiah. Dude, I couldn't be more excited. I've had that name picked out for probably 5 years.
Really? Why is that? Just curious. Is there a
it was from the Bible. Yeah.
I figured.
Biblical. Jeremiah Joe. But his middle name is going to be Dennis, which is my father's name. So it's going to be Jeremiah Dennis. And I think JD is JD. More unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More unique. It's cooler than JJ, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a recent change, but yeah. Jeremiah Joe, man. Biblical name. I've just always liked it. And, I like the book of Jeremiah. And, yeah, dude, I'm just so excited. When I was in fifth grade, my mom likes to remind me, when I was in fifth grade, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said a dad. And this was literally a year after my parents brought me back from Florida. 1 year, and I loved my dad at that point that much, you know, to want to be a dad, just like him. So I've always wanted to be a dad. I've never really found someone that was like, okay, I'm gonna be a dad with this person. Like, and I mean. Truthfully, like, Eric and I weren't ready to, like, have kids, you know, like, yeah. But now that we are, you know, like, I'll just state, like, I trust God with my life, like, you know, and the level of, or the amount of times where maybe I could have had some pregnancy scares, you know, if we're being transparent, and I never did, I just believe that this is the right time for me to have a son, you know, I couldn't be more excited, dude. You guys are game already changer, dads. Bro. Yeah,
it's awesome.
I see you guys both with your sons. You know, it's like,
it's a blast, man.
I already know, man. I can't.
Your world's gonna get rocked, but in the best way possible.
Yes,
it's the biggest change in my life ever, for sure. But it's been amazing. I wouldn't change it for the world.
I'm a little anxious about, like, I work so much.
Right. That's the biggest thing I struggle with as well. For
yeah.
Sure. It's like, hey, you know, it's hard because, you know, you want to be around, but you also need to work. You've got, you know, it's a hard balance, and there's going to be days where, you know, you are there every second, and then there's other days where you were not there, and I'm sure, because that's just how it's going
to
go. And
it has to.
And that's the thing. It's never 50-50. It's never going to be equal. And at the beginning of the child's life, I mean, you really don't have much to, like, there's not a lot that you can truly do.
No, they're just sleeping.
Right. and it's not like you are producing the food for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, you might be able to help at, you know, when it comes to changing diapers and all mm-hmm. that, but even like that's super simple. That's super easy.
Yeah.
But that was the thing is in one and two, Melissa was like, fuck, I've got this. Like,
yeah.
I don't want you to touch them. Like,
just like,
you're going to hurt them or break them. I'm like, like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
But no, she was afraid of letting me do anything because she thought because of how big I was and things like that.
Something I always said to Gina, like, she was like, why are you putting his clothes on so, like, delicately? I was like, because I'm afraid I'm going to break his arm.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm putting his shirt on here. Because I'm like, you know, there's like a running joke with me and Gina. It's like everything I do is hard. I close doors hard. I do everything.
We've mentioned it on the podcast before.
I tighten bottles really tight. You know, I do everything, like, hard. And so I'm like, when I knew that was a thing, like, that she always told me, so I was like very delicate. Like, she's like, "What are you doing? You can put his arm in the sleeve." I'm like, "I just don't want to break his arm." Like, you know, I'm like terrified that, like, I'm gonna snap something by putting his clothes on too hard or something. So, but then I got over that fear pretty quickly.
I'm super excited. Like, I know, and also too, like, I'm pretty traditional. in my like just like household. So, you know, Erica will be a stay at home mom. And she's fortunate enough now to like work from home anyway. So amazing. So she can always be at home, always with the baby. And eventually when the baby starts, you know, we're gonna homeschool Jeremiah. And a lot of our friends, frankly, are thinking about doing something similar. So Erica might just end up with a whole bunch of kids at homeschool, but like, you know, whatever it is, we're going to homeschool for sure for us. And, you know, being in a situation where Erica gets to work from home and gets to make her own hours and gets to like kind of work her own, you know, her own schedule. We've been very fortunate, and I plan on, you know, being the provider of our household and taking care of, you know, what we need to take care of to make sure everyone can eat and have clothes and, you know, have the house. And
now, whoa. She's on my team here.
Yeah.
I need her to produce.
No, she's amazing. I know.
She's doing great.
Pat, so do I. So yeah, no, I still, Erica, if you're listening to this, three deals a month.
Yep. That's all we want.
That's our goal.
Standards.
No, but yes. She is excellent at what she does, and I respect her so much. And she's a hustler. Like when I need her to, you know, kind of pick up, you know, some of my slack, she's always down for it. She's a great partner. She's a great teammate. And yeah, dude. So you know, the baby will be at home most of the time, and I'm afraid that I'll be gone a little much early on. But hopefully with the 5-year plan it'll free up some time by the time he starts to really understand, like, no, and he's able to play with me and he's able to like kind of like get out. And
that's the age where it's just like, I'm at the age now where he's at the age now where it starts to get really fun.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He's active, you know, because that first year or so, like, you know, they're not doing much, you know,
just messing around.
You know, when they start doing stuff, they start smiling and laughing and crawling, you know, it's all exciting. Like every new thing is very, very exciting.
I'm sure.
You know, just like watching them pull up on the couch, like that was a huge, you know, like, holy shit, he's standing.
Yeah.
He's standing, you know, but like when they start walking around and talking and like start comprehending things, like,
yeah.
Like Calvin's like speaking in sentences now, like, mommy, out the window, there's a mail truck, you know, like the other day, it's like, whoa, he just put that whole thing together.
Yes.
You know, like, whoa, that was crazy.
Yeah. So
you
my goal is to be around for that. Like, I'm going to work for the next 3 to 4 to 5, whatever, however long, like 3 or 4 years, so that I can buy back the time that I'm spending now. Then, you know, like that's balance to me. It's like, hey, like you got to go, you know, 4 or 5 years at this thing in order to free yourself up a little bit. It's not like, hey, I'm going to work Monday through Thursday and then have Friday through Sunday off.
Right.
That's not balance in my mind. You know, it's like, I'm like long-term balance, you know?
Right. I'm the same.
So I'm going to hustle for the next few years and really do my best to put a team in place that I can depend on, that I can rely on, that can carry on the standard of quality experience and service for our clients. And hopefully by the time we are ready to start homeschooling and my son is putting, you know, is getting intelligent and starting to comprehend and want to experience stuff. Hopefully then from a financial standpoint and from a time standpoint, I'll be in a position to provide like the best life possible for my son. So that involves some real estate investing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love the plan that you guys have in place, which is, you know, essentially you're going to buy small multifamilies every year for the next 5 years.
Yes.
Is
well, for the next three years, we'd like to buy one multifamily a year and do one flip a year, which I don't know how, but up until now, we've wanted to do stuff and we figured out how to do it. So, whether it's financially or with time or whatever, so we'll figure it out. But that's the goal, is to buy multifamilies, small ones, but like increasingly large ones, mm-hmm. you know, like we bought a duplex not too long ago, which we'll live in for the next 9 to 10 months. And then we'll buy another, hopefully a four unit fourplex. And then maybe just buy a nicer fourplex, the last one, you know, because mm-hmm. we don't really want to get too much into commercial stuff. But we'd want to accumulate a few properties and do a couple flips over the next 3 years. That will just essentially like give us enough money to build the house on the land that we want to live on forever. You know, it's like, cool. Like if we can get enough cash flow from those to pay, you know, a mortgage on $1 million house out on 20 acres.
Or, yeah.
50 acres or whatever. Cool. Like that's what I'm looking for. I just need someone to pay the mortgage in 3 or 4 right. years when I'm ready to buy that piece of land. So, so that's really it. We're not looking to be like lifetime investors, which I'm sure we'll end up being lifetime investors.
Who knows?
But
never say never.
Yeah, no, in my opinion, there's really no downside. Like real estate is the only thing we can't make more of.
Right.
Except building up, which nobody wants, you know? No. So like there's no downside to owning land. There's no downside to owning property, you know?
And Erica's from Washington, right? She's out from
she's from O'Fallon.
Okay. I thought she was out further.
No, she's from O'Fallon, but her family lives in Rolla.
Maybe that's what it is.
Which is deep.
That's,
that's 2 hours. Yeah. What, west or?
You can get you can get some land out there. And it's not that far.
It's not. It's not. It's
cheap.
Her father's got 22 acres in, I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's great. And, you know, and like I said, I grew up in the country. Like, my grandfather had 100 acres, 100 plus acres. My great grandmother on the other side had 81 acres. So, like, when we played, like, we were gone all day. Mm-hmm. Like, we'd leave the house. And my parents wouldn't see us until dinner time.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in suburbia, but that was the same way. Like,
you just go.
There was a house in our subdivision that had a bell, like an actual school bell
for food
that they would ring when it was like time for all the kids to come home.
Yeah.
And we would
just take our bikes. Yeah. We'd be gone all day.
I mean, you know? To me, that's
we're
like
building forts in the woods.
It doesn't get better. No. It doesn't get better. We had 4-wheelers. We had dirt bikes. We had fishing poles. We had BB guns, like we were ripping, you know, my whole childhood. So
fun.
So it's amazing, but like I want my son to be able to grow up like that, you know. And if in today's world it takes me getting surrounded by 50 acres of trees to do that, I'll do it, you know. It's what I'm gonna do. So, and not for nothing too, we'd like, you know, I like the idea of being somewhat self-sufficient. So like having some chickens, having a couple, you know, head of steer,
a garden,
having a well, having a nice garden. Like, you know, I like the idea of all that, and just enough for my family, you know, and whoever else is living nearby. Like Mark and I played with the idea of just buying together, me, him, Lavecchio, like, you know, buying 200 acres somewhere and just splitting it up. And all of us kind of living everyone's kids homeschooled. Everyone's, you know, we got enough beef here to last a couple of years. We got enough chickens here to last every day. So like, you know, I'm still not closed off to those ideas, like, you know, but for me personally, that's still the goal. Despite anything going on the outside, that's the goal, is to get there and to just make sure that we can always, you know, survive and thrive, you know, on our own little thing.
They're going to buy this 200 acres and right in the middle is going to be Post-it Omen school.
Yeah.
Dude.
Where all the kids come in and go get home.
And frankly, like I'm cool with,
you're good.
I'm cool with an hour commute. Like, if I'm an hour within Posted, you know, because I think Posted will be where it's at now for the next 3 years at least. That's my lease. But it'll always be probably in the city somewhere, you know, just for everybody's sake.
Just for convenience.
Yeah, convenience and everybody's sake. For the client's sake, too, because eventually Posted will be a studio that our clients can come and shoot their stuff in this room or that room or this room or that way. You know what I mean?
Like,
that'd be badass if you got one of those rooms set up that Remington was telling us about.
Oh yeah. I'll show you that after this.
A dome.
With the screen that can turn into anything.
Yeah.
They have one set up.
Yeah.
My buddy who was telling you about, did the sound engineer, he designed this whole thing at Webster, and it's like
so
sick.
It's
like the same thing that they make Marvel movies on.
There's a dude that just did a podcast.
Chris Williams,
Modern Wisdom.
I listen to
he just did it in the world's premiere one. Yeah, dude, that's eventually the goal. We'll have a bunch of different rooms, podcast studio, shooting studio, whatever it is. So it'll be pretty dope.
All right, one last question. This is something that we've been asking all of our guests. On your tombstone, when you pass away, what's it going to say?
Here lies Matt Joe.
Man, I don't know. When you asked me my bio last night, it would be something close to that.
Okay.
I don't know. Proud Christian, American, husband, father, brother, business owner, in that order.
Damn.
You know? Something like that.
Love it.
I don't know if it wouldn't be that word for word, but like those are the things that are important to me. You know, but like, you know, very recently, I've started to really receive external validation from my outward profession of faith, you know, in the way of men coming to me and being like, hey, you really inspired my faith walk, or now I read my Bible with my daughter every day because of what you do. And I've been watching you do it for years. And, you know, God's been showing me that there's fruit to, like, me being courageous about my faith, you know. Yeah. And I wasn't always, and I haven't always been. And, you know, I think the greatest compliment that I could get is that I led somebody to living life for Christ, that I led someone to having a better relationship with God or getting to know the scriptures. Like, that's the best thing that I could receive. So being a, you know, and I've been focusing a lot on identity. You guys know I get political sometimes, but, like, I separated myself over the last couple of months from those types of things because who I want to be identified as is a Christian. And then beyond that, American. I don't want to be black or white or, you know, minority or not or whatever. You know, like, so my identities lie in those things and in those orders. And those are the priorities for me in my life. And the legacy that I want to leave are directly associated to those roles that I play: Christian, American, husband, before father, then brother, business owner, and whatever else comes after that, you know, or friend. Friend is in there,
yeah,
before business owner, you know. So, like, those are my priorities, and that's the legacy I want to leave. It's like, what's the mark that I left on those things and in those orders?
That's awesome.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think we'll wrap it up here. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for supplying us with
some gum
yeah, and some mints. And
thank you for our people over at Fit Flavors with the promo code podcast50 through the end of May. One time purchase of an online gift card, you get 50% off.
And a big thank you to Matt Joe for taking me under his wing, without whom this podcast probably would not be as possible.
Ooh,
yeah. Dude.
Make sure you like and subscribe, and we will see you guys on Monday.
Don't forget to drop a comment.
Yes. Yeah.